Even as the focus of the world has shifted to the crisis in the Middle East, the crisis continues in Iraq. As ISIS advances toward Baghdad, a senior Kurdish official is quoted this week saying Iraq has already broken up into multiple countries. That is especially hard for Roy Scranton to hear. He was a private in the U.S. Army in Baghdad in 2004, and he felt the need to go back to Iraq, so he did earlier this year. His story appears in Rolling Stone, and he's with us now. Roy, welcome to Here and Now.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, why did you decide to go back to Iraq?
To be honest, I'd been thinking about it for years. Maybe not as soon as right after I got home from there, but within a couple years, it started to work on me. I started thinking about the missed opportunity of actually talking to Iraqis when I was there, and the sense that I hardly actually knew the country at all, even though I'd spent a year on the ground in Baghdad. And as time went on and the American occupation wore on, that feeling and that desire to go back and both see the places where I'd been before, but also to connect with the people who lived there only grew stronger.
Was that because of guilt?
It wasn't at first because of guilt. It became as when I went back this time in April, I began to feel a sense of guilt as more and more Iraqis talked to me and told me about the destruction and suffering that they'd been living through for the last decade. But when I went, it wasn't so much a sense of guilt as it was of curiosity and a kind of cultural obligation, I guess.
And you went back in April, by the way, which was before the most violent recent round of fighting started in Iraq and the approach of ISIS coming from the north, especially toward Baghdad. But what was it like in April when you were there, and how was it different from when you were there before?
It was frightening, and it was a difficult time. This was before the most recent surge from ISIS, but it was after ISIS had taken Fallujah and really grown much more active in the north and in Anbar province and in fact, were even in some of the suburbs west of Baghdad. So there was very much this sense that something was happening and that the city was under siege. There were car bombs happening all the time in Baghdad, sometimes as many as several in 1 week. And it felt very dangerous at first. And all my old military reflexes sort of kicked in, but without the sense of security in having a weapon or having my armor or having 20 other dudes with guns around me. So I felt very exposed. Within a few days that passed and I sort of got used to the low-level tension of being in a city where car bombs go off sometimes, which was like my experience the first time. Sort of in 2003 and 2004. When I went the first time, you know, we had all these ideas about what war would be like and what Iraq would be like. And those quickly proved to be sort of inflated and sometimes illusory and sometimes just false. And we got used to doing the work of occupation over the first few months there. And we got used to a sort of low-level tension and a low-level alertness and a low-level hostility that just became the working conditions.
Well, and you write after seeing it just this year that meant having to confront the possibility that we didn't just leave Iraq, we had lost Iraq. Those are your words in the Rolling Stone article.
Yeah. What's happened in Iraq over the last year, you know, has been the disintegration of the state that we left behind and really sort of it shows the evidence of the truth of what we'd actually done, of what we'd built there, which is not a sustainable state, not a real democracy, not a good infrastructure, but, you know, a partitioned, sectarian, corrupt rentier state run by an autocratic leader.
Well, what do you see happening in Iraq's future? Did you speak to anybody there who had any hope for the future in Iraq?
I talked to lots of Iraqis who didn't have much hope at all. I talked to a few who were hopeful for the future, one especially, a young man named Mithaq Walid, who's a student at the Foreign Service Institute, training to be a diplomat. So he was appropriately diplomatic about Iraq's future. He thought it might take 10 or, you know, even 20 years for Iraq to recover from the damage of the American invasion and the occupation and the sectarian civil war. But he did think it would happen. He believed strongly in the power of oil money to provide a basis for rebuilding Iraq's infrastructure. I just got an email from Mithaq the other day, though. He's from a Sunni-Shia mixed family. He had to move his family. They lived further north in the country. He had to move them into Baghdad because they're threatened by ISIS now, and he himself had to move.
After your experience there, you've come back and you've written about it, and you're talking to us about it now. What is it that you would like Americans to know about Iraq that perhaps they don't? What message are you trying to get out?
The first is just to think about it at all, which, you know, is not something that it seems like most people are much obliged to do. But when people do think about it, you know, there's a couple important things to keep in mind. One is that this sectarian conflict between Shia and Sunni that's often invoked and often referred to as some sort of ancient quarrel that goes back in thousands of years and can't ever be solved. Well, this was a product of American policy. The germ of the sectarian conflict, the seeds for it, already existed in Iraqi culture before the U.S. invaded. But when we arrived, American policy promoted that conflict and used it. People like Paul Bremer and others used sectarian identity as a way to try to control Iraq and to pit Shia against Sunni. And the other thing is that when we left, we didn't just erase it. When we left Iraq, we remained connected to it through, you know, not just our weapons and the oil and the money and our support for Maliki and all that, but through the impact we made on the culture there and through the impact going there and in being involved in that war had on the thousands of American soldiers, and also the impact that war had on us as citizens and on our democracy. You know, things like the torture at Abu Ghraib and the Haditha and the reasoning for the war and the weapons of mass destruction and the whole process of the war. It's not something you can just forget or wash away. It's still living with us.
That's Roy Scranton, an Army veteran of the Iraq War. His story about returning to Baghdad a decade after he fought there is in Rolling Stone. We've got a link to it at hereandnow.org. Roy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jeremy, for having me on.